welcome to Bagel Tech Big, the show that's completely lost its identity from the Bagel Tech Network. It sits somewhere in the week, and we happen to to cover technology, but nothing more than that. I'm the Lulsec bloke, and I'm here with a fantastic crew of people who are going to talk the week in technology, and I am so frigging hot you wouldn't believe it.
Oh my God.
How are we all doing? Cheers.
I feel like I'm the only person who's seen this so far.
You probably are.
I thought I just walked into a Monopoly game.
Yeah, I do.
I had a bit of a clue because I saw the moustache and shirt and tie earlier, so I should have guessed what you were up to, matey.
Right. The Week in Technology, discussed with our fantastic crew. Top left, Mr. James Hart.
Bonsoir. Good evening, Ewan. Good evening, viewer.
How are you doing?
Good evening, listener. I'm all right, thank you. I've had too many biscuits this week. Lots of meetings, to which I have brought my own biscuits, because don't forget who I work for. And frankly, it just seems that everybody doesn't like the biscuits I bring, so I have to eat them all, and now I'm sick of them, which is probably better for me.
This is an extremely serious question and could dictate your longevity on this podcast. What biscuits have you been bringing?
What biscuits haven't I been bringing? Chocolate chip cookies, chocolate hobnobs, chocolate digestives, mainly chocolate biscuits, because I like them.
I think you're going to have to be the person responsible for biscuits at the Bagel Tech Bash, James.
Absolutely. You have, well, if you've been buying a variety of biscuits and they've still been turning their nose at, mate, then it's definitely on them.
But one of my colleagues doesn't like chocolate hobnobs because they taste like straw.
Well, that's just obnoxious and abnormal.
Absolutely. So. They're biscuit royalty, they are.
Absolutely. We're done with that. We're not talking about chocolate hobnobs anymore because I'm getting a craving. moving on, Mike Hurley, top right corner. How's it going, mate?
Very well, my friend. How are you?
I'm okay. Good week.
Very good. Very good. Busy, but good.
And you were going to be on the Mac show tomorrow, but no, you're not.
No.
Work has intervened.
Unfortunately.
Below him, Sarah Gray. Hello, sysadmin. Perfectly situated to talk about hacking the websites, I would have thought.
No comment.
Oh, no, I don't mean you do it, woman. God. I got more sense than to suggest that. And last but by no means least, the man who hosts Tech Talkback, Mr. Eric Lanigan.
Hello, hey, man. Ewan. I have the strangest craving for honey roasted peanuts since I saw your costume there. I don't know why. Anyone else feel like maybe some salted cashews or something?
I knew you couldn't just let it go and just have a laugh at it and then carry on. You had to start making insidious comments about stuff. Anyway, right, the week in technology. It's been a huge week for Lulsec. It's been a huge week for the Metropolitan Police as well, or maybe not, depending on whether this person's actually done anything wrong that they've managed to arrest a young 19-year-old. Brazil suffered the wrath of Lulsec, and there's been a few other problems with security as far as Dropbox are concerned. They managed to switch off passwords for 4 hours, so all you had to do was type in a username and you could have got anything you damn well liked. And Holland has passed net neutrality laws. Ooh, so it's enshrined now. The mobile operators can't sting people and can't limit them to the access to things like Skype and TV wire services and that kind of thing. Where shall we start? Lulsec?
I think that would be best.
I think you seem dressed for the occasion.
Then I can take all this crap off.
But we will all be nice about them, okay?
Don't smile.
I think you need to be on for the whole show, Ewan.
No, I don't. Thank you, Sarah. No, I know. Let's have a proper conversation about Lulsec, because, I mean, are we going to say good or bad? And I would suggest you be honest here.
Bad. I think it's what the internet's all about, myself. The internet has become clinical and cynical and commercialised, and there's this sort of scum that's floated to the surface where people are trying to, I don't call Amazon and all these companies scum in the traditional sort of bad sense. It's just the fact that there is this coating now on the outside of the internet that people know that is the commercial side of the internet. And I think Lulsec strives to get back to what the internet is, and that's people mucking about with a giant network. And I celebrate it myself because they're not there to undermine anything more than the establishment, which has set itself up over something which is ostensibly free. That's what I say.
I think from a corporate point of view, if you're a big corporate with a big corporate network, you probably think, no, they're terrible. But I think they're doing a fantastic job is making people take, the corporates take security seriously with our data, because as they've shown, you know, they've exposed so many different organizations. I'm not going to name one, but there's obviously one that's at the top of the pile. But it's...
Are we talking Sony PlayStation?
Well, yeah, I couldn't possibly comment.
Now, have you actually looked at their database on the LOLSET website?
No, I wouldn't do that. Why would I be interested in that?
Oh, you should. If you go to the LOLSET website, it's very informative.
I have a problem with them publishing it. I don't have a problem with them hacking it and proving that they've managed to hack somewhere because it gets the companies to do something about it. But what I do object to them is actually publishing it.
It's prudent to check it if you're a PlayStation Network subscriber because you can find out if your credit card details.
Now, you'll be very pleased that on your behalf, I have gone through the entire user database looking for our names.
Thanks for that. I haven't even got a PlayStation 3.
And you're not on it.
Right.
Nobody here is on that.
Damn, nobody's bought me a PlayStation 3.
I couldn't find any British people at all. They're all American addresses, the bits that they've published. Also, the list is about 40 times longer than it actually needs to be because Sony's PlayStation management of their database is utter crap. There are listings there that have got 20 to 40 entries in duplication. So we're talking a really bad database. Eric, you're the only American here. You're the only one that could be on it, and you're not. I did look.
Well, good. Thank you. Did you search for my email address or did you search for the name?
No, you can search for your email address, you can search for the name, and you can search for passwords. There's two people that live in New York City, a man and a wife, and they've got the same password, Flopsy, which appears to be their bunny rabbit.
I heard about that.
So if we could take a step back for a moment, because I have to plead a tad bit of ignorance on this. I've been seeing these stories come through about LulzSec does this, LulzSec does that, and I skim it. And it's like, okay, they're hacking these people. They're having some fun. They're getting some lulls out of it. I don't see what is making this the gigantic blowing up story that it is. I don't see what drives you into don a top hat and monocle over this.
Well, because it's just a bit of fun, I'm not particularly serious about this.
What exactly is this? Okay, so what is? I mean, have they hacked some large targets, or it's just one of the first collective?
Well, like the CIA.
Yeah. Well, I mean, from some of the reports I read, that kind of stuff has been done before, but maybe this is just getting more press because we're hot off the heels of the Sony hack, and because it's a collective group with a name. As opposed to just disparate hackers.
They did the Sony hack. They've also done most of Brazil's government websites this week. They've had a good old go at the FBI with, I need to quote this and I'll probably have to bleep it out later, but F the FBI Friday, which is becoming a bit of an institution, I gather. And they've done soccer and they've done some serious people.
Requests on Twitter.
So is it confirmed now we know for sure that they're behind the original Sony breach that had the credit cards?
Yeah, they've actually published the database that they ripped from the hack.
Oh, okay.
And they've published, there's some absolutely fantastic stuff on their website. If you want an ATM in the UK, they've got a database of every ATM in the UK. So you can type in a postcode where you are, and it'll tell you where you can automatically. If you type in "find" on the list on your browser, it'll go to the nearest postcode that fits that area.
Yeah, but I could do that. I mean,
yeah, okay.
Every bank has one of them on their own page.
Yeah, but I couldn't.
There's no hacking involved there. Sure.
No, I know, but they've done it. They've done something useful. They've ripped it off from someone else's website. I mean, I've got to say, I mean, the question I want to ask everyone: are these people Batman, or are they the Penguin? Or the Joker?
Somebody got TweetDeck running, by the way.
I've got TweetDeck running, and I don't know why it's making a noise.
You can switch the sounds off.
Well, I know that, but it's coming out on the Mac, and it shouldn't be
making a noise. Can I be the first to answer the question?
On top of James's screen. I mean, the screen that James is on.
Oh, right, okay. That'll be because it's on my laptop.
So the webpage you're talking about that has all the information, is it lulsecurity.com/releases?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I was looking at this yesterday. I didn't really see, any major big name sites. I don't see PlayStation Network. So that's what is confusing me.
The PlayStation database is on there. There's a list of PlayStation users from the database.
Okay, I'll look for it. I see Sony Pictures. I see Nintendo something, just Nintendo.com.
But, so, Mike, you're not happy about this. Why is that? Give us your reasoning.
I just, this sort of stuff makes me unnecessarily nervy. I think when you're looking at taking down massive institutions, they're getting the information of people. I mean, say, for example, the Sony PlayStation stuff. So they're posting up all this information about everyone online, you know, usernames and email addresses and passwords that could be used elsewhere. So you've got like your flopsy couple that, you know, they could be using that for their online banking.
Well, they probably are.
They're making this available to the world because somebody, like a couple that's using the same password, are clearly not extremely savvy, so may not even be aware, didn't think about changing it.
That's why I'm saying that I think the part of this that I think is really bad is the bit that they're actually publishing stuff. I think it's great that they're actually doing this because, as I say, it's actually getting the corporates to take security seriously, which is so, so important.
To be fair, they've published a lot of extracts rather than the full databases and things like that. I think because they're too big, but also the fact that maybe there is a bit of morality going on with this, that they've got to publish something to prove that they've actually done it, but they're not putting everything out there.
Well, yeah, so why do they need to publish passwords?
Well, who's going to believe them?
But it's not fair for those people that they're publishing.
I don't need to believe it anyway. Like, I could just say, oh, they could have made that up, tracking a random word generator.
Okay.
But so, you know, they don't need to do it. Who are they proving it to? Why do they need to prove anything to anyone?
Is the world a better place with them or a worse place? Jones is saying better, I think. And Sarah,
I think on the whole, I'd say better as well.
Eric?
I think it's collateral damage.
There's collateral damage from it. I'll get you that. Eric?
I'm honestly still not clear what makes LulzSec different. Just the fact that it's a collective group that's doing this, or are they releasing more publicly than most people do?
I think what you've got is organization behind it. Which...
Yeah, and I think the thing that is great about it is the fact that I like the fact that they're actually that they are making a big deal out of it and getting lots of publicity, because I'd rather somebody like this actually find it than some one-off hacker actually who go off is going to then find the information, hack it, get the information, and then sell it without nobody knowing about it.
We don't know they haven't done that.
Yeah, but that's the whole point. Well, yeah, I suppose you're right.
Well, they've exposed.
I would say word.
They have exposed the White Hat organization, and the leader of that organization then approached them to hack their competitors and put them out of business and offered them a substantial sum of money, which is actually quite worrying.
That's immoral.
Well, they rejected it.
That's gang warfare, isn't it?
They rejected him and they outed it. They outed him for doing it.
Excellent. The right thing to do.
So that kind of action gives me some faith in them, at least. I don't agree with the DDoS attacks, I have to say. Because that really is just mutilation of something.
Yeah, that's mindless.
But taking data, saying we've taken data, publishing an extract for the purposes of improving security of organisations or hacking organisations which are clearly manipulating and molesting individuals, I haven't got a total negative on that.
I already feel like I know what the response will be, but what is the benefit? I mean, these companies are saying about making companies take security seriously. They're just be enhancing their security to protect themselves against LulzSec. I mean, it's like they are telling people to enhance security to protect them against themselves, because it's only a hacking organization that's getting to them. I just find it a bit. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's the whole point, isn't it, Mike? That's exactly who we want them to protect it against.
But then, because there are some worse hackers out there, as smart as the people setting up the security. Surely, eventually, they'll just another hacking organization will work their way around it.
Eric,
yeah, of course, eventually. But it's better that it's hardened at least a bit until the next hack comes along, rather than just leave it the way things are now with the organizations that have been hacked.
Eric, go ahead.
I think if hackers are willing to take the legal risk, which in some cases are major felonies, and then to not to harm anybody or any company, but then, well, I mean, harm a company by exposing the fact that they have pretty bad security for a lot of people's financial information, for example, that's valuable. But I think, you know, you enter. What is that?
Sarah, switch your volume off, mate.
Yeah, bloody advert came in the middle there. Sorry.
I think if you have a group like this who is hacking large companies and grabbing a payload, and then making it providing just as much proof as necessary. I don't think they should give away anyone's passwords or account numbers or credit card numbers. And it sounds like they may be doing that or linking them to their email addresses.
There's
I don't think there's credit card numbers
on the details that they've listed.
I'm sorry?
There's no credit card numbers on the details that they've listed.
Okay, well, that's good. But it seems like there are some passwords.
Yeah, there's passwords and account names.
Yeah, so I think that's wrong.
But not email
addresses?
I don't
think they should be doing that.
And email addresses.
And email addresses. But, well, that's a tricky one.
Yeah, I think in general, if you're doing it in a way that doesn't harm the users, but merely exposes the security flaws of the company, like it kind of seems like the PlayStation Network problem did, I think that's good, because what we learned, like in the example of the PlayStation Network and the recent, I think it was Citibank or someone, we learned that these companies have shockingly poor security. And so it can be a public service if it's not done in a way that harms the users. But I think in this case, it may have.
See, what?
Anything that raises the profile of security, given the amount that we're actually doing things on the internet now, is a good thing.
See, the one thing I think that's quite interesting is where James started off the discussion. And I think I've sat and thought about it, and there's a certain element of this that I think goes back to the root of why LulzSec has surfaced and started to bubble to the top and has actually got quite a following, 200,000 users on Twitter. Is that the internet was this egalitarian thing where information was exchanged, and it wasn't a commercial database, it wasn't a commercial outlet, it wasn't a shopfront. And now what you've got is large organizations taking their position of the fact that they've got this ability to sell things to you, but they're leveraging that position not just to sell things to you, but to start harvesting data from you. And some people are using that position that they will not sell you things unless they can harvest that data from you. And that's where I start to think, I'm being extorted on the net. I think, stepping back even further, there's been a watershed change in the net where it's now being controlled by large organizations that want to leverage their dominance and position to gain the data of individuals and to then extort information from them.
It's a business marketplace.
Well, I don't think it should be. To
the
a certain
web
degree.
Is a business marketplace, perhaps, but it used not to be.
Yeah, but you know, why can't it be a business marketplace where people can go anonymously into it, buy what they want, and walk back out with nothing more than a data and a card exchange? All of a sudden, I can't just buy a book from Amazon. I have to be a member of Amazon.
And add to that, I would say, the attempt at government regulation of the internet as well, which is quite concerning. And I've written a couple of notes about things that we haven't really covered yet. And in some respects, the hacking organizations are a form of protest against the government mouthpieces. The government presents themselves as in a certain way. And Lulzraft is a good example of the offshoot, not the offshoot, a completely separate hacking organization that's got a similar name to LulzSec, who've attacked quite a lot of the Canadian government and stuff in protest of some of the stuff they've done. So in some respects, it's rebellion of the most, you know, of the most basic form, because kids have been hacking since, you know, the days when Bill Gates used to hack phones and things like that. But what's also funny, though, is that as a consequence, because it has become such a major public outcry, is that rumors of hacking have emerged. And that actually is on the whole a good thing, because what happens is people have cause, because of these rumors, to check their bloody websites to make sure they're tied down as best they can. But I think people have become a little bit slack in their security, and as Ewan said, a little bit careless with our data. And the Sony thing just
absolutely, James.
And they're careless with it. There's no restriction, no regulation, no police authority associated with it. They're lax with it. They don't fix it because it's expensive, and they don't care.
And also because of the fact that the government aren't making it serious in terms of prosecuting people properly, where you know, big enough fines and stuff for this release of this data.
Well, there is no internet government.
Well, there's the Information Commissioner's Office, but it's and Data Protection Act, but they, I mean, it's minuscule the amount that companies should be being fined for these breaches.
See, I think it's interesting that there's no banks or financial institutions that have been hit by LulzSec. Because
Trump,
I think,
security.
Exactly, because I think those institutions are taking security seriously, and are working hard and putting finance and R&D into increasing control of security. But there are lots of people that retailers are the worst for lack security. They get your details. As long as they've got the details, they don't give a toss whether they lose those details or not, unless it gets to the press, then they care.
I think you probably find that there's those companies that have grown up on the net are probably retailers I'm talking about, will probably find that they take security, like Amazon and such, they will take security far more seriously than people, than the high street retailers that have just added this on because everybody else is doing it. And it's almost like, oh, well, let's just chuck that on there. And it's a sideline. It's not really taking it seriously. So they've not really put a lot of effort into it.
Or maybe they just haven't learned yet.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And maybe then he's Lulzsec the teacher.
Could be, yeah. Maybe. But there'll be others that do this as well.
Well, what we have to worry about is international terrorism and the rogue states, as we call them, that are trying to do exactly the same thing, and we don't even know they're doing it.
Yeah, so better off having Lulzsec who at least publicise what they're doing, so people are aware of it.
And it puts and actually, in some respects, it's like 4chan except better.
How are the authorities doing in terms of the PR battle? I mean, do the FBI in America, Eric, have a positive image, or is it seen as they're losing the PR battle against groups like Lulzsec?
That I don't know. I know that they, what did they hack? It was like the FBI webpage and CIA.gov. If you ask me, those are just, those are the publicly facing, globally outward webpages that are just kind of the most generic info pages. I doubt that a hack of CIA.gov is in any way equivalent to hacking their internal security that the spy network itself would use. But in terms of the actual PR, I'm not sure.
See, the one thing that puzzled me, or actually intrigued me, was the arresting body for this young lad who supposedly was the head of Lulzsec when he was arrested, and now turns out only to be hosting an IRC chat room, potentially. There was a story based around that and the Brazilian thing on the BBC website, and there was a press conference with the Metropolitan Police Commissioner, Sir Paul Stevens, who sat down and was asked to comment about the situation with Lulzsec and said it was very significant that they had Mr. Cleary behind bars. Although he declined to discuss the details of the case, the commissioner added, the challenges around cybercrime are extremely significant and deeply worrying. Now, you've still got me at this point, Stephen, but, Mr. Stevenson, but we're worrying across the gamut of cybercrime, from personal information to how a paedophile can enter a child's bedroom. I can't talk much about Lulzsec, he says, because of the crime that's going on and the case that's going on. So what I'm going to do to satisfy the Daily Mail readers and make sure I keep them on board is mentioned paedophile.
Yeah.
And that is where he lost me, I'm afraid.
This is the real problem. This is the problem. This is the question was, how are the government organisations being portrayed? And they have control over the press. And if the press want to make a big thing out of it and make these hackers look like demons to the public, they will do so. And unfortunately, no matter what they do, if somebody hears that it's inconvenienced one person by reading it in the newspaper, they're going to hate them.
See, I think at the moment, the best thing that he can come up with to make Lulzsec look malicious and abhorrent to the Daily Mail readers and Daily Express readers is to bring in child pornography, which has absolutely nothing
either that, it's either
to
that
do
or
with
the
this
Nazis.
Story at all. Yeah, don't forget the fascists.
But why? Okay, is it possible for the media outlets to make the average consumer think anything other than Lulzsec are bad? I don't think it's very easy to make them anything other than they're demons.
I think there's a schism. And I think the schism's coming from the fact that those that are socially aware of technology are becoming very, very pissed off with the way that the situation of the internet exists and the leverage of large organisations and government bodies over the internet, and there's a rebellion coming. and those that are aware will eventually fall behind the LulzSec line. I was talking to an accountant the other week, and he was saying, well, of course, you've got a real problem now because all of the government agencies are linked by computer. So you claim for 20,000 miles on your car, they've only got to go to a computer because they're linked to the database for the Driving Vehicle Standards Agency, and they pull up your last MOT certificate, and it says you haven't done 20,000 miles in the last 12 months. Ka-ching, we've got you. And people hate that.
But is that wrong?
No, it's not wrong, but people hate it. And then there's that at the legitimate end of the spectrum, and it goes right the way through to the point where you've got serious abuse of information, probably at a governmental level as well, and at a retail level, and people aren't happy about it.
Well, take, for example, CCTV cameras. All it takes is one person with a bad eye, you know, with an eye to making the most of what he see he or she sees, and you've got a lot of trouble in your hands because they can use that information for ill, and depending on the positions of power, they can make somebody's life an absolute misery for no reason. We're just lucky that we're not in that situation at the moment.
Has anyone read the book Demon?
No.
You need to get the book Demon, either on audiobook or on hardback. But the Demon is about a guy who has an MMO game in the cloud, and he dies, but he sets up a whole series of demons to react to certain events that occur, and eventually sets up a worldwide organisation, killing spammers, ripping off governments, siphoning cash off left, right and centre, creating weapons of mass destruction, and he has an army of people that live in a thing he calls D-Space, where they put on these glasses and they have predicted information portrayed on the glasses that they can then follow that comes from the cloud. And I looked at that and read the story and I thought, wow, what a fantastic story, great entertainment. And I think you're at the situation now where there are groups and maybe even a single body like LulzSec that will just grow and grow and grow and grow and grow, and will get worse and worse and worse and worse. And it's not because of the fact that they can. It's because people are sick and tired of extortion of power and information that are in large organisations and governments. No?
I have trouble agreeing on the whole about the fact that they should be here. I understand the idea of
I'm not saying
security.
They should or shouldn't be here, though, Mike.
What do you think, Ewan?
No, I'm not saying that they should or shouldn't be here. What I'm saying is I think the world has to reckon up to the fact that groups like this will grow and grow and grow until the information that is stored and used and abused by organisations is reduced.
I can see how that works, actually, because the whole I'm Spartacus thing on Twitter was a good example of how people took ridiculous proclamations and decisions made as British as representatives of justice and completely what just made them into ridiculous. And so I still think it's a fairly small number of people, but there are I do agree with you that there's a schism. However, when put in perspective with the amount of other appalling things that are going on in the world, be it in Africa, be it in the Middle East, be it in the Far East, you know, there are pockets of really, really bad situations where governments are so corrupt. It kind of these protests do pale into insignificance somewhat, and one wonders whether their attentions could be better placed to make the overall world a better place rather than directing anger at a government that is not, well, in the grand scheme of things, not really doing too badly.
And where are most of those negative situations in third world countries emanating from?
Well, is it corrupt governments?
Why are we fighting everyone in Afghanistan at the minute?
I don't know anymore.
Because they want to build a big frigging gas pipeline and oil pipeline right through where we're all fighting for it. They've got to control the other area, otherwise they can't build the pipeline. Why was Israel handed over to the Jews? It was handed over exactly where it was because that's where they claimed it was, and it happened to be nicely in the middle of all the oil fields. The whole world has been fighting over resources since someone burnt the first piece of wood in a cave somewhere. And everything that emanates from that, and it's the power of the West to maintain assets that it uses at an exponential rate that it can't supply and fuel itself with. And everything emanates from that position.
At the moment it does, because there are some absolutely massively growing economies, and I think I've cited it before, but India has got an amazingly educated population, a massive population that has no oil, has never had any oil, and they are probably quietly developing their own alternatives. Japan is another perfect example of a state that's really suffered recently, and it's a shame that they have done so, because they've made so many technological advances because they haven't been involved in the battles. And China, again, I think it's because it represents such a huge fraction of the population. There is a lot of consideration to be made of what and because there is so much of a debt to them from the larger established state, that their decisions actually will have a much greater bearing on the world as a whole than the stuff which we're desperately trying to hang on to. It's taken from a global view, and I know this isn't technology at all, as it's only brushing on it really, because the way it's being carried out is through these technological underhand techniques, because let's face it, I think that's probably the future of war. Nobody's taken a really global view of it, because every government's fighting for themselves. And that's kind of weird. And that's why LulzSec, because it transcends government, is in its way, if it can focus its attention on the bigger issues, it could be a real force for good.
Yes.
I think, in my own opinion, you asked my opinion, Mike, my personal opinion is, at this point in time, if you can remove the DDoS stuff, LulzSec's providing a positive.
I still don't think that a DDoS attack on somewhere that they are protesting against is like holding a banner out. It's tantamount to Parliament Square having been cleared of protesters because they don't want them there, and people having to find another way to protest. The governments don't want to hear it, don't want people protesting against them, and they are finding ways to do it. And a distributed denial of service attack against a company which is behaving, in some people's opinions, badly, or a government organisation, or somebody doing something that's bad, doing it for a laugh, or doing it because you've really doing it to pick on somebody to make them to cause problems, is one thing. To cause somebody to go killing themselves, and I imagine there are some people who would be desperately affected by it. But when there is such a thing as corporate liability, and a company can take liability for something, there's no way to cause them pain. There's no other way to cause them pain.
Right. Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Absolutely.
Sort of.
So the chat room's getting ready to slit its wrists. So we'll move on.
Cheer us up, Jeff. Let's talk about.
Oh, I can't laugh. No. My bloody monocle comes out. No, we've got two choices here. We can talk about the Japanese endoscope that swims when it gets in your butthole, or we can talk about a decent joke, Nokia.
I prefer to talk about Nokia.
Let's talk about Nokia. So what do we think? Is it N9 this week's got released?
Yeah, N9, and today an image of the first Windows mobile phone. It's quite funny. Nokia's CEO Stephen Elop stood up on stage, and they were going to show an image to some press at assemble for a press conference. And he said, "Could you please all turn off your cameras now? As what you're about to see next is highly confidential." Obviously, some people didn't.
Oh, how dare they!
I know these people. The gall of some people, Ewan.
That's like saying to a child, "Don't press that button."
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he said it was highly confidential. Well, okay, Scoop City.
So we've got pictures of it all over the place. It's called the C-Ray.
It's a code name. It's got to be a code name.
Okay. Well, you're going to sell sod all with that as a product name, aren't you?
It reminds me of Stingray.
Exactly.
I have this image in my head of evil member moustaches. Just like Marina. You. Oh, no, it's not you, is it?
The N9 chassis. Ewan. Debut Tuesday, running the soon-to-be-retired Migo system. Oh, dear. And then they've got this thing called the C-Ray coming out. It's their Windows phone. Their big special thing.
The N9 is just, it's like 2 years too late. There you go, finished! That's what they've done.
I think the N9's UI looks really interesting.
Looks great, but it's too late.
I think
Migo
looks fantastic, and I think it's such a shame that Nokia decided to can it. They didn't even give it a go, which I think is the real shame. But they could have given it a shot.
I'm willing to stand corrected here, but isn't Migo canned?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
So yep. Symbian's gone, or being phased out. Mego's gone entirely.
Mego is sort of on hiatus. but I think that Nokia had probably made the decision far too late to move to Windows Mobile, so they thought, we spent all this money on Mego, let's try and recoup some costs by releasing the N9.
I'll tell you what, I think I might buy one when they're 50 quid in the sale.
I would as well.
Well, that might be next week.
I'm going to keep my eye on the price for it because I reckon that could be a really good steal, a unique kind of phone that, I mean, I was looking out on Amazon when the Kin sort of, was the Kin ever sold in the UK?
No, it never made it.
No, it's a shame. I would even have ordered one because I believe there was a real cut price one at some stage.
Didn't they do only 50 units total?
No. Eric?
No, it, you got it any did go to that this? Level. It was in the 10 numbers.
Yeah, it was 50. I think they sold 50 units.
It was either 50 or 250. I will find out what Wikipedia says. Even.
The chat room is wishing that we'd done the butthole swimming story. Bad luck.
I think that's really interesting, personally. I've been following it this week.
Who's blowing over a bottle?
That's my phone. I've got to go get this call, security stuff.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Lulsec on the line.
So let me ask you. So I mean, it's a flat glass screen with Windows Phone 7 and probably identical specs to every other Windows phone, right? I mean, I think it just speaks to how the modern phone operating systems, Windows Phone in particular, has just commoditized the making of smartphones. It's just Apple made the form factor just a flat black screen that can do anything, capacitive touch with no keyboard or anything, and by Microsoft trying to one-up Android by saying we're going to have some tighter specifications for what the phones will require. They're going to have at least this kind of hardware and this kind of screen and these buttons and so forth. By doing that, we then see less variation than Android offers, and therefore every Windows phone is virtually identical except for minor adjustments like different speakers or a slightly different camera.
Or an endoscope.
Or a butt swimming endoscope. Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
No, this has got a 1 GHz A8 Cortex processor, 8 MP camera. But the one thing I thought was quite interesting is it comes in storage modes of 16 and 64 gig. Now, that's very different from its competitors around it, isn't it? I mean, in terms of storage space, the iPhone is the only thing that ventures that kind of high as a standard onboard at sale memory, isn't it?
Because even the most recently released Android phones, the Samsung S2, has only got 1 gig, isn't it, or something ridiculous? 2 gig?
Yeah,
And you have storage to put your own micro lax. SD card in to expand it.
Yeah. Sarah, what's your onboard storage? Because you've got the Nexus 2, haven't you, or the Nexus?
Nexus S.
S, yeah.
I can't remember, it's 16 gig, I think.
See, that was quite big, but nothing's really, I mean, the iPhone's not gone up to 64 yet, so no. That's a hell of a leap forwards for them. Definitely.
If you ask me, it's just the one spec they felt they could tweak to make their phone seem the slightest bit different from any other phone. I don't see a Windows Phone user coming close to using that kind of space, especially, I mean, if Apple is by far the most media-centric phone platform. If you look at the statistics for Android users, loading music and things synced from a computer, which is really the only way you can load up on videos and music to that capacity of 64 gigs, even they haven't thought that 64 gigs was a priority yet. And I don't think Windows Phone users are going to get that, require that anytime soon.
Who's an iPhone user here? Yep, Eric, raising your hand on an audio podcast doesn't help much, mate. So what spec have you got? 32 gig?
Yes.
How full? How full is it?
Half, well, no, I use it up because I'm crazy. I put lossless music onto it, but no, okay. That's just me.
So you've only got 5 tracks then?
Yeah, pretty much.
Sarah, how much of your 16 gig have you used?
Very little because I don't use it as a media device. I've got a separate MP3 player that I use for audio and video.
Right, okay.
That's what I do as well.
Yeah.
I've got 64-bit iPod Touch, 64-meg gig iPod Touch, and that's full.
Full. Mike, have you got an iPhone? Take mute off, dude. Hello?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, have you got an iPhone?
I have.
Right, how much storage space have you used up on it with media and so on?
Mm-hmm. I have used 13 gigs.
13 gigs, so hardly anything of at all, or is it a 16? Or 32?
It must be a 16.
Yeah, see, I've got a 32, but I've only used less than half of it in terms of media, and I've got quite a lot of media on there. I've got songs, I've got podcasts and stuff like that for when I drive, and I'm lost without those. They're my entertainment while I'm sitting jogging along the motorway. But people aren't using huge amounts of storage space, I don't think. But in this thing's giving it 64 gig of space, and it's kind of like megapixelage on cameras. It actually doesn't help that you've got more megapixels being captured in a smaller space, but it's the numbers race. And this is the only thing that they've got to increase in terms of numbers, because they're not increasing in spec, they're not increasing in RAM, processor's not going up. It's very samey as the Windows phones, as you're saying, Eric. The only thing that they've got to increase is the storage space, but could that be enough to actually sell the phone?
No, I don't think so, because I don't think the method for getting on media onto the device is very robust. I actually don't know what it does. You know, I guess it uses some kind of media Windows Media Center based media loading program. But from the statistics I've read, the iPhone users and iPod users and iPad users use many, many times more media synced from a computer than any other mobile device platform. And I think that this is going to, I think this is just, you know, like you said, it's a gigahertz processor. It's probably 512 RAM, or at least the same, or 256, is the same as the others. Same camera, same general size, weight, yeah, and battery life, you know, and of course the same software features. So it's the only last, it's the last thing they have. It's good to change and differentiate themselves. It's as idiosyncratic as the HTC phone that had deep bass surround sound, faux surround sound speakers and a kickstand. I mean, it's silly. It's not going to appeal to many people, and it's going to be too expensive.
See, there's an interesting comment in the chat room that Nokia are just a firm that are waiting to publicly explode. And are they a done deal? Spent force?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Are the glory days of Nokia going to return, Mike?
I'm not sure if the glory days will, but I think where they may not be doing so well in the smartphone market, they still sell a lot of phones.
I mean, they're a very popular brand in the Far East.
Yeah,
I mean,
because iPhone they sell is the dumb one, but feature phones, and they probably still sell lots around the world. And I don't know, Windows Mobile could... They could do it. I mean, was it the Mango that the most recent update that's coming out looks relatively compelling.
But is there a longevity for a firm where their most popular selling phone in the Far East is the 3310?
Yes, because they've been selling it for so many years.
Yeah, but you can't. I mean, the reason that they're selling in the Far East and third world countries is the fact that people can't afford $600 for a phone. So they're quite happy spending $30 on a 10-year-old technology.
I'm not entirely sure that's going to be the case for very long. As 3G exactly starts to roll out, I don't think the 3310 can do anything, really. It can just about send text messages and make phone calls, and maybe it's got a calendar on it. But then again, it depends what people's lifestyles are out in the developing world to require all the organizational and entertainment capabilities of a smartphone. I imagine they work a hell of a lot harder than we do and don't sit in a meeting watching YouTube videos. Not that I would ever countenance such a thing.
I have faith in Nokia's ability to come back. So, don't know why.
There's the question. What are they going to do to turn it
Windows
around?
Mobile 7.
Oh, no.
I was going to say, how heavily are they going to become dependent on that? And then do we think there's any possibility they might end up becoming one day part of Microsoft?
Yes. I think that's a definite possibility. And they've also, Elop did say that where they haven't now, they wouldn't necessarily rule out Android in the future.
But they will if they become part of Microsoft.
On a deal at this stage.
So they're going to play
for their patents, not unlike Palm.
Say again, Eric.
They might be bought for their patents, not unlike Palm.
Agreed.
Yeah.
True. Well, I mean, they've just started receiving a good sum of money from Apple every quarter, haven't they, in license fees? Yep. $160 million, $116 million.
That'll keep them going.
Per quarter. That'll be rather nice. Thank you very much. But the I think the statement from them kind of connotated to the fact that they wouldn't make a profit this year without that. It was very helpful to the bottom line, unquote. In other words, we're going to go seriously belly up if we don't get this money. And now we've won this thing with Apple, we've got a chance to survive in a little bit longer. I mean, it's it's kind of like giving the dying person a bit more morphine and a bit more anti-cancer drugs, but you know, the thing's still advancing at an alarming rate for them.
They are going to be making some changes. Windows Mobile will be a change for them, so that could reinvigorate the market. There could be benefits to them from this. They could become the sole and only provider of Windows Phone. You never know. That could happen.
There's a comment in the chat room. Microsoft Kin was the mobile phone industry equivalent of bringing a duck feather to a gunfight. And the other one is from Steve. Nokia will be the Netscape of the future. So this thing's going to morph and transfer itself into something entirely different. But as an entity, Nokia will be no more prevalent than GeoCities, perhaps.
I think... I think what might happen is that if Nokia don't do anything apart from Windows, I think they will end up becoming part of Microsoft.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
It does seem like Microsoft Nokia need that platform, that outlet into the mobile market, and that deal they signed a few months ago, it kind of. So my first thought when I was watching the Steve Ballmer and the guy from Nokia, I was thinking, I can see where this is going.
But I mean, hang on a second, because if you're Nokia, do you really want to become embedded in an organization that has tried and failed on two occasions now to enter the mobile phone market?
Yeah, I don't think necessarily when they did that deal, that's what they had in mind. From Nokia's side, I think it was an opportunity for them to get to be seen to be the preferred phone for Windows 7. From Microsoft's side, they were thinking, there could be a future opportunity for us to become a phone company.
I don't think they tried and failed. Are you referring to the Kin and what else?
Zune was always going to be the Zune phone. There was always a roadmap for Zune to be a phone, and it never happened.
I mean, the interface is the same.
Yeah, I know,
isn't it? It's pretty much the same user interface.
I'm not saying it isn't, but what I'm saying is the Zune never turned into a phone as it was originally intended.
Maybe they've more decided it became a Zune phone.
I think they decided to
have it all in the one package. So to instead of doing Windows Phone, the next evolved version of the Windows Phone, instead of, Windows Mobile... They just decided to wrap it in with Zune and one nice little package.
Yeah, I think Windows Phone 7 shares far more similarity to Zune than it did to the previous version of Windows Phone, which was an entirely different operating system.
No, you're talking about OS. I'm talking about hardware. Microsoft has tried twice and failed to get into the hardware market linked to the software. They want a single product that's about them controlling hardware and software, just like Apple. And they failed twice with hardware. So what they're doing is now looking lovingly over at Nokia and thinking they're going to be able to buy in all the patents, as you say, and buy in the hardware and take all of their stuff and dump it on the hardware and everyone's happy. I think they've got their arm around Nokia. Nokia are looking at it a bit shiftily, going along with it for the moment. But at the point that they think that Microsoft are going to totally absorb Nokia, Nokia are going to go, nah, sorry, mate, and they're going to go over to Android, and they will rebuke them as a
really?
If they're going to take them, they'll take
That's
them as a hostile
interesting
takeover.
Speculation.
Well, it's total speculation. I have no idea what I'm talking about, as usual.
Well, no, it's an interesting alternative.
Yeah.
I mean, to some extent, the Microsoft being consumed by Microsoft seems like the obvious thing, and you know, I think I'm kind of stating what seems the obvious. So, and we know that Nokia, you know, they've been around for a while, and I can see, yeah, they might say, no, we're not going to do that. You know, we're going to go to Android, but it depends what state they're in at that point when Microsoft make an offer for them.
What's quite telling is that in business, I am still not sure why it is. But the only corporate handset you can buy that syncs with our exchange servers is an Apple iPhone, because it's the only one that syncs encrypted with it. And there is no Microsoft phone at the moment that syncs with Exchange to be used as a business phone that you can carry around with you. BlackBerries don't do it. Android phones don't do it. Neither of them do it.
Yes. Interesting.
It's pretty sad.
Good point, James.
It's pretty damning.
Well, I'm really surprised that nobody's done anything about it.
It certainly shows where that may well, you know, go to what we were saying about with Microsoft.
So if Nokia play their cards right, they can get a foothold in the business market.
I think Nokia are looking at Microsoft at the moment as a bit of a sugar daddy. And when the money runs out, when they don't look like they're going to be able to keep up the apartment in Mayfair and the regular visits on a Friday night without Microsoft's wife knowing, they'll be gone in a heartbeat over to the Android sugar daddy instead.
But Nokia have got nothing left. They used to be a business that did all kinds of stuff, from Wellington boots to gas masks. And now all they do, they used to make set-top boxes for television. They used to do all kinds of stuff. And now all they do is make phones and the occasional internet tablet, you know, the N70, well, I can't remember what it's called now.
That's interesting. I wonder if they would start expanding back into other fields, at least maybe in certain markets.
It doesn't look like they're going to. That's the strange thing. It looks like they've put all their chips onto Red.
It does, but actually they've got a whole pile of chips that they're going to put onto Black afterwards, but then they're done. They're out of money.
Here's what I think is going to happen, and this is what I think was when Microsoft first partnered with them, this is what it kind of looked like. So Nokia said, we don't want to make an Android. We don't want to make Android phones because they're commoditized. It's the same OS and you're just competing on nothing really. Everyone's selling the same box like a PC. But I think by going with Microsoft Windows Phone 7, they ended up being even more of a commoditized device because Windows Phone 7 has an even stricter guidelines for what the phone for the phone's hardware and functionality. And it's the same interface. They can't even build like an HTC Sense or a Samsung or Motorola Blur or whatever that is, touch UI, Touch Wiz, and put their own user interface, their own skin on top of it. So I see them going. I see two main possibilities for how Nokia could end up. Number one is they could end up becoming very competitive as a commoditized phone maker. They can compete on price, on size, slimness, battery life, and some kind of hardware innovations. And basically, they no longer create anything that has to do with software. That's what's done by Microsoft. If they're not successful with that, or if they're lukewarm or maybe successful, they might try that with Android too. If they say, well, hey, why limit ourselves to just one OS if we can bring that expertise and hardware to Android as well? And they might do that. If they're not selling anything and this becomes a huge flop, Microsoft may buy them. Or the other possibility is if in order to survive and be good, Microsoft comes through on their perhaps overblown promises to favor them, they may, the other people, your HTC, your Motorola, your Dells, who are making the other Windows Phone 7 devices, may say, well, hey, they're giving Nokia all the special treatment. And we make just as much, if not more, by selling an Android handset on virtually the exact same hardware. So why are we even bothering with Windows Phone 7? And if that happens, I think Microsoft would buy Nokia and go all in, and suddenly it's a Microsoft-branded Windows Phone 7, and they're in the same boat as Apple.
I think that's
So you're saying, Eric, you're saying that when everyone else, all the other phone vendors realize what Microsoft are up to with Nokia, they'll dump Windows 7, which will become, then it will become a fait accompli because Nokia will be the only ones that will be selling Windows 7.
But I think at that point, you've got to run the risk that Nokia may already have preempted that take and would also have perhaps hedged their bets with an Android option that will suddenly come to the fore. And then you've got a question whether Microsoft, A, want to bite them at all, or B, actually, if Nokia are resisting, it then becomes hostile takeover, and that's going to cost Microsoft two times the value of the share price.
This is why I think if you're a phone vendor, you're better off keeping your options open.
Like HTC have.
Yeah.
Do we know whether Microsoft made them sign an exclusivity agreement that they wouldn't go with Android? They probably did, I would think.
That'd be interesting.
Because they haven't done with HTC, and HTC do Windows Phone 7, don't they?
Yeah.
Good, Tor. Last chat, of course, or last comment, of course, goes to the chat room. I like to make fun of people in phone stores that try and convince me that Nokia is a great device, says Robert. I had a Nokia cell phone once. I used to travel in Europe. Only feature it had was a flashlight, says Ross.
And Claw 101 came back with, no, I think you'll find Europe has many more features than that.
and Max S has the last word. Nokia is Finnish.
Oh, yeah, very good.
Very good.
Right. Our last word, of course, goes to our sponsors, UK2.net. We have had a few emails with them pinging backwards and forwards today with a couple of comments from some people that I've forwarded onto them. And they've asked us for some download data and that kind of thing. But next month, hopefully, there's going to be a little competition that they've put together with a fairly decent prize. And we said to them, you know, are we keeping up our end of the bargain? Are we sending people through to you? Are you getting people coming on board? And they said, oh, yes, we're getting lots of people coming forward. Lots of people are using the BagelTech code and lots of people are coming on board and transferring their services to us. First of all, thank you to everyone who listens to any of the podcasts on the network and has transferred their service to UK too and has shown support for the network as well as our sponsor. Eternally grateful. Thank you very, very much. If you haven't, please continue doing it. They're a great service, great company. Go check them out on prices. Whatever you buy, if you go to the coupon code section at the end when you check out and type in BagelTech, all one word, you will get 15% off whatever's in your basket. It could be anything, co-location services, VPS servers, domain names, e-commerce solutions, anything at all. 15% will come off your total price because you're a BagelTech listener. Go to our website, scroll to the very bottom, and you'll find the UK2 logo on the left-hand side there. Click on it. There's a tracking link on there that says that we've sent you. And when you then shop and go through and buy something, they'll know that you've come through from BagelTech. We don't make a penny out of it. We're not making any money whatsoever out of UK2.net for the sales that you push through to them. We just get the kudos for the fact that we've actually managed to get you to go to our sponsors and you've put some faith in them just like you've put some faith in us. So please, please, please support UK2.net. Even if you want to just sign into your account, click on our link. And they'll know that you're a returning customer from BagelTech. Thank you ever so much for doing it. And thank you ever so much to UK2.net for supporting the BagelTech network. We would be lost without them. The amount of data we've consumed, they've put 10 extra nodes on our server last month to cope with all the demand of the data that's going off. So we're eternally grateful. Cheers very much. We've also got a competition with Wirecast. They've given us 4 copies of Wirecast to give away. All you've got to do is click on the logo that's at the bottom of the BagelTech website again, and it'll open up an email for you that says Wirecast competition. And in that email space, all you've got to do is say, I want a copy of Wirecast, or I deserve a copy of Wirecast because, and then write an answer. Witty, funny, whatever you want to write. Write an answer there and you could win a copy of Wirecast this month. But fear not if you don't want to do that, because there's another copy of Wirecast that we're going to give away next Friday. So you've got until we record the BagelTech Big Show next week, and then we'll start the new competition. And all the entries will have to be in by then. If you just send in your email, I want a copy of BagelTech, I want a copy of Wirecast, because then you could win a copy of Wirecast. Dead simple. Have we got any cool thingies, panel? James, you like to start us off?
I think I did. Has my phone switched itself off? No, it hasn't. I'm going to go for, what's it called? 3G Watchdog, which is really cool. It's an Android application. I shall send a link to the... I've been playing with the UK2.net little slider thing. Some Apple iPod Touch games are so facile that even the VPS-O-Matic on the UK2.net website is more fun than it. You get a little CPU come down. Anyway, so I've got distracted. Let me do 3G Watchdog.
An Android application from AndroLib.
That's the fella.
AndroLib, yep.
Oh, no, 3G Watchdog by Richard Gruett, apparently. Let me just do... let's pipe it into the chat room.
Nice to see you were prepared, mate.
Oh, well, like I said, I was playing with the UK2.net thing. You made me click on it.
Okay.
And basically, if you've got a limited data plan like I have, every time you dial up on the 3G or the HDSPA, it tells you how much data you're using, and you can set thresholds. So if it goes amber, you know you're heading towards your monthly limit, and it means you don't end up having any of those really nasty penalty payments.
Overages.
Yes, overages. That's the phrase, ovaries. And so at the moment, I know, for example, I've used 260 megabytes this month, which isn't bad.
Not bad at all.
So, yes, I think it's one of the really useful things you can have on your home screen, and just a ready reckoner to make sure your phone is reasonably healthy. And I'm quite happy with it.
Okay. It's 250,000 downloads. So yeah.
It's completely free for the normal version.
Oh, no, sorry, 6 million downloads. So it's very, very good. And it's free. We like free. Good pick, mate. Mike, have you got a pick for us?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with an iPhone app called Quotebook. Quotebook is just like a locker for quotes that you pick up. It does some really good stuff. It has auto suggestion, for example. So if you start typing in a really well-known quote, it will automatically complete the quote for you and put in who said it and a source for it. And you can save your own ones in there. It recognizes quotes on the clipboard. And you can sort of, so say, for example, you copied a quote from somebody on Twitter, it would recognize the text, paste it automatically, and when you go to add a new quote, and you can add who said it and give a source where it's been said. I really enjoy it. It's just a nice little place to collect interesting text snippets that I see from around the web.
It's always good to have quotes for people, isn't it, when they come up with a situation or a circumstance that you want to pass some comment on. Yeah,
and you never know when someone might request a quotation.
Yeah, no, very good. 59p in the UK store, 99 cents in the US store. And there's a fabulous one right there on the page on the iTunes web browser that says, when you're courting a nice girl, an hour seems like a second. When you sit on a red hot cinder, a second seems like an hour. That's relativity. Albert Einstein. Great quote.
Great. It's a really good, the devs are really nice guys as well. So well worth it.
Oh, better. Are they British, old boy?
They're not, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe don't buy it then.
Please do buy it. That's what I say. Please do buy it.
Sarah, what have you got for us?
Talking of not British, this is very much not British. It's very much American. It's the iHeartRadio iHeartRadio application for Android. A couple of nights ago, I was awake in the middle of the night. I don't know if anyone saw me tweeting at 2-3 in the morning, but I woke up at 2:30, was wide awake. And I love listening to talk radio and have done for years. And I actually got this installed on my phone from a while ago. I found it and installed it. And I just started having a play around, started listening to stations. And I know that from the past that particularly if you're in the UK or outside the US, a lot of radio stations in the US don't like you listening to them because for whatever reason. And
a lot of radio stations in the US don't like you listening to them.
Outside of the US.
Oh, okay.
I know, it's just ridiculous, but something to do with advertising or whatever. But
it's advertising
anyway,
and the fact that they have to make a data leak for every single listener. It's tough.
On it at all, which is great. So I was able to lie in bed and listen to various different radio stations across the US, which was
Here's a critical question, Sarah. Can you add your own?
I don't think so, because it's mainly, I think it's almost exclusively American radio station. So I don't know. I've not actually tried it that much, but you can certainly pick your own favorites. And I was doing that and adding one, listening for a bit. And then I thought, oh, I like that. And adding it to my own favorites. But
There's a list of compatible devices there for Android, but yours isn't on there, Sarah. So am I taking that actually the compatibility actuality is far bigger than the...
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I mean, the one thing it's not in the Android Market Store. You actually have to go to what I did is actually go on my phone, type the URL in, and then actually download it that way. And you actually have to go into Android settings and untick an option to allow you to install applications outside of the marketplace. But I was glad I did, because it's really good.
Just a comment from the chat room. TuneIn Radio is an equal alternative if you've got.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a couple of others, but I was quite impressed because of the restrictions that this allows you to get around. If you try and listen to stuff through the websites of the radio stations, they very often get blocked.
James, like American radio.
James is also suggesting F-Stream, so good alternatives if you don't want to, if you've got other platforms. Eric, what have you got for us, mate?
I have a suggestion. I have a Target suggestion.
You haven't done it again, have you?
What?
You haven't got anything again.
No, I do. Okay. In fact, it's playing right now. Lulzsec, if you're listening and you've got your DDoS zombie net ready to go, I've got a new Target for you. It's Ustream.com, who seems in the last week since we've done this show to have flipped a switch on an extortion scheme for the viewers.
Yeah.
I don't know how many of you guys have noticed, but as we've been doing this whole show, about every 10 minutes, it stops the stream completely and plays a full screen ad with sound, completely interrupts what we're saying and any other video on their page. And then it pops up with a screen that says, become a premium member for only $3.99 a month and see no ads. So thank you, Ustream. You've just killed the only reason I've ever recommended you to people.
Yeah, I think next week we may be on Justin TV. Sarah, how hard is it to swap over the feed on the homepage?
I'll have a look at it, but it was irritating. Well, it caught me out earlier on, as you know. So, what the hearth is that James is holding up?
You've been hacked.
Yeah, Lulzsec, have at him.
Yeah,
we'll look at it during the week, guys. But I mean, either way, you'll be able to get to it through live.bageltechbig.com as usual.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. My pick is pretty simple. It's Photoshop Elements 9. And the reason it's Photoshop Elements 9 is not because it's a fantastic program, because it absolutely is. It's my pick this week because it's £50 in Amazon at the moment. So if you want a copy of it, it's well worth the money. It's not expensive at £50. So please go and get it. If you're thinking about getting any photo editing software, now's the time to buy it. Don't be a tight ass. Go and spend £50 and get hold of this. It's a brilliant buy at £50. It's hugely, hugely beneficial. I'm not going to upgrade. I've got Photoshop 5 at the moment, and I've always been caught in the race for upgrade of Photoshop. I've got 9 and had a play with it this week. I'm not going to upgrade. I'm just going to stick with Photoshop 9 because it's Elements 9 because it does everything I need to do. 99% of what I do with, I could have done in Adobe Photoshop version 7, which was 10 years ago. So there you go. Adobe Photoshop Elements 9 in Amazon, £50.
That always used to be £50, the Elements version. I didn't realise it had gone up.
No, it was always about £80.
Oh, right.
£79, something like that.
Maybe the version they're selling comes on 600,000 cassettes.
Hey.
What?
We're just talking about old school boxes on the chat room.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is that you were holding, you? And it looked like some kind of rectangular prism made of a cardboard and some kind of ink on the side with pictures of people, and I've never seen such a thing.
Back when I was living in a cave and chasing mammoth, that was all the rage, mate. Cardboard boxes, fold outs, fly leaves, lyrics. There you go.
I mean, did you have to drive somewhere to pick that up?
Oh, good God, no. I had to give up my details, which I didn't want to give to Amazon, to get them to send it to me via the post. When the teleporter's fixed, it'll come even faster. There we go. Also, I want to talk about the London Mac User Group, because A, they're a fantastic bunch of people, so please go and support them. They've got a Facebook group page that you can go and have a look at, and you can get tons of information and join in all the question and answer stuff that goes on there. They've also got a fabulous event. On the 18th of July, and several other people will be sitting on a panel talking about Lion for Mac. It's happening at the Wood Marylebone Pub in London NW1. And there's going to be some very special people there, some good special guests. We've got Don McAllister going, which is nice. And there's another person who's got a bit more infamy or fame to them. But I don't want to say who it is yet, because they've tentatively agreed. But Steve doesn't want me to say who it is, so we'll announce that a bit nearer the date. But that's the 18th of July at the London Mac User Group, the Wood Marylebone Pub. The other thing that we've got is the Bagel Tech Bash. It's the 8th of July. It's only in a couple of weeks' time. It's going to start at 1 o'clock in the afternoon with the Mac Show. There's going to be a barbecue and beer and loads of fun. And we're going to do all the shows live during the course of the party. And you can be on the panel. You can give your impressions if you come to the party. That's the only thing you've got to do. So send me an email to bageltechnews@gmail.com and title it Bagel Tech Bash and tell me that you're going to come along to it. And we'll set your place out at the table and you can pull on a serviette and start eating the drumsticks that we're going to have, and the sausage rolls and that kind of stuff, the chipolatas. I'll be providing a whole pile of beer. Bring a bottle if you want, but there'll be a pile of beer here anyway, so there we go, no problem. Where can we get a hold of you, everyone? James?
I'll be in the biscuit aisle at Asda, and also twitter.com/syzygy, syzygy.
Jolly good. Mike, where can we get a hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at iMike, I-M-Y-K-E, and at thepodcastingproject.com.
Excellent. And Sarah?
You can get hold of me on my website, which is sarahjaneuk.com, or on Twitter at sarahjaneuk. Sorry. Oh, yeah.
Oops. Did you think you were the alter ego then that I mistakenly tweeted out the other week?
I thought I'd said the wrong one. So, it's on Twitter, it's at Sarah Jane UK.
Right, we'll have to rewind the audio and see there if we can find out what the other one really is. And Eric, where can we get you, mate?
EricLanigan.com, Twitter.com/EricLanigan, Eric with a K, EricLanigan.
Rightio. There won't be a Bagel Tech Big next Thursday night. I need to talk to everyone because I meant to do it before the show started, but I haven't yet. I'm in Glasgow working on Wednesday and Thursday, and I won't be back home until Friday morning. So we need to chat about when we're going to do it, but it might be going back to the Friday night just for next week. And the week of the Bagel Tech Bash, it's going to be on Friday night anyway, because of the fact that that's the night of the bash. Otherwise, there's no point, really. It'll go back to 10 o'clock then. This won't stay in. I hate this frigging monocle. It's been a pain in the butt.
You've done really well with it, Ewan.
I've done okay.
Why do people ever wear those things?
I have no idea.
Well, they normally fit the eye.
They're a lot smaller. I've actually cut up a pair of glasses to get this to kind of work. But there you go. We'll be back again next week at some point with the Bagel Tech Big Show. We'll find out when it is and who's going to be on it a bit later on. Thank you very much for your patience this evening. However, I'm off to play with my review unit for the butt-swimming endoscope.
That's not a euphemism.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for swimming. Bye-bye.